You didn't pick up a handout. There's one in the back there. We are continuing on with the parenting class here, much to some people's chagrins. it does seem like it's been a long session here, but we're continuing on. We have a couple more. And this morning, we're talking about, we're shifting now from the topic of character development in our children to talking about responsibility. And I think the one of the prime areas of responsibility is what we're going to be tackling here this morning, and that is the use of technology and media. It is absolutely inescapable and pretty amazing when you kind of step back and think that if we're parents, then we are old enough to remember when we didn't have all this technology and the media bombarding us 24/7, and how quickly we have assimilated to that. Sometimes we can forget what life was like before the iPhone and before our Android devices and the internet ever present with us throughout our lives. And so it's incumbent upon us to just think responsibly about those. And that's basically all I'm going to do today, is just kind of give you a couple of thoughts, a few thoughts about the topic, and then also ask some questions to get you thinking. Because, as I will highlight later on here, this is obviously one of those areas where Christian freedom reigns. There is a lot of freedom in life in Christ, and this is one of those areas. There's no hard and fast rule. This is one of those areas where God's Word obviously does not directly speak to us because of the fact that this technology has just come into being in the last couple of decades, but there are certainly principles that we can take from that and apply to our life. So on your handout there, just four basic foundational principles I want to talk about. One that is near and dear to my heart, and that is everything in its proper place. It is real easy to make sure that our lives, in the sense of our homes or our workspaces, are neat and orderly and in proper place, everything in its place. But much more difficult when you talk about things like technology and media, which have, as the second point brings out, kind of invaded our space. You know, it used to be that we had a TV in one room in our house, maybe, if you grew up like I did, and you had to go into that room and, you know, lean over and turn on the TV, and that's when the media came out at you, and then you could turn it off and leave. Well, now, you know, we have our phones with us 24/7, and most people do. Those of you that don't, you probably are a lot more disciplined than the rest of us, because it does take discipline. Those things so easily get into our daily rhythm, our daily life. It takes a lot of intentionality to not let it become this all-consuming habit. Since technology is in our space now, you know, we have to think about those things. I mean, there was some statistics I'll give to you just based upon some Barna research. How many hours a day do you think the average child spends using technology or interacting with media? How many hours a day?
35%.
He nailed it. Five. Yeah, about on average, 5 hours a day. What's that? Yeah, what about the summer? Yeah, the summer kind of bends that curve, yeah. Right, and so, you know, without commenting on whether that's good or bad, because we can talk about the good and the bad of it, it's just a fact. And so when you think about 5 hours a day and how many hours a day are they even awake, you're thinking about how much effect this is having upon children, upon kids, if you're not intentional to limit it or to guide them, to give them parameters to use those things. Because one of the, another fact that that Barna brought out is how many of us sleep with our phones right next to us. Yeah, like 70 to 80% of people. And I was kind of surprised. I thought it was going to be higher than that. I sleep with it next to me. It's my alarm clock now. You know, I don't need an alarm clock, right? It's our phone. And the implications of that. I mean, that has a lot of implications when you think about it. I used to be involved in a lot of work with sleep disorders, and this was before the iPhone and everything. But now it's just exploded. I mean, when people are on their phones constantly and they're on their phones until the minute that they think that they're going to go to sleep, it's really hard. It's easy to shut off the phone, but really hard to shut off your brain. And so the implications of sleep disorders, of disrupting our rhythms, and that's one thing when it's for us, but when we allow our children to have those kinds of influences upon them, just how more critical that is for their development, for their sleep, for their daily living activities, and the implications of that. C on your handout there, the tools of our life have changed, and yet we've remained the same. You know, and we have to remember that our phones or our laptops or any way that we access media is really just a tool that has been developed by mankind through the providence of God and the gifts that he's given. And so those tools can be used, you know, for good or for bad. You know, it used to be that our tools, if we were talking about a long time ago, you know, resided in our tool chest or in our shed or in our garage, and you put them down and you walked away from them and you were done with your job or your task. And now, you know, our phones are in our pocket. And so we don't ever get rid of those tools. We're just walking around with tools all the time. And those tools, they've designed on purpose. Those that know a whole lot more about it than I do know that they've been designed so that they're constantly screaming for your attention. And the effect of that, just the distracted life that we lead now. And so it really begs the question, you know, what kind of a life as parents do we want, not only for ourselves, but for our children? You know, what kind of a life do we want for them? Do we want to allow them to be just constantly distracted and not able to focus and not focused on the things of ultimate priorities in our lives? Or are we going to help them and allow them and teach them and guide them so that they can use the tools when they're needed and put them away when the work is done and when it's time to focus on other things? I included in there Psalm 90, verse 10, the years of our life are 70, or even by reason of strength, 80. Yet their span is but toil and trouble. They are soon gone, and we fly away. So the tools have changed, but we're the same. You know, life is the same. I don't need to really point that obvious fact out to you, but it's something that we have to remember. Yes, our tools have changed. And our tools are what we use for toil and trouble on this life. And yet, the human heart has not changed. And the human mind has not really changed either. I mean, yes, the Lord has, through his providence and grace, expanded our knowledge base. We're, you know, certainly more literate than ever before. But the heart issues are the exact same. The habit issues are still the exact same. What do you think was the number one factor that people identified as developing their identity? You know, and this is talking to teenagers and young people. What was the number one factor that they saw, even in today's culture, as the number one factor that developed their identity as they grew up? Yeah, family. Yeah, basically. Right, absolutely. And so I think all of us that are here, that's why you're here, that's why we're doing a parenting class, is because of the importance of parents and the importance of the family on the development of children, for good or for bad. And, you know, family, really, when you think about it, is all about the formation of a person. I think about my family, who's not a real close family. I mean, I don't think anybody would ever say that in looking at our family. I come from 10 children, and my mom and dad had a profound impact on us as far as our development. And we have similar characteristics, even though in our adult years we don't spend a lot of time together at all. We don't communicate very much at all. And yet there's this similarity, this common thread, and I think that's probably typical of most families, this common thread because of the development of our persons. And then when we talk about, you know, the way the Lord uses that in covenant with us and our children, just the power of that is something that we have to be very intentional in wielding, so that we don't just fritter away our time and lose focus and lose the opportunities that technology and media can have for good. And we'll talk about those. It's not all, I'm not trying to be all down on technology or anything like that. It's all about just putting things in their proper place. That's all there is to it. The other thing is that I had included on there under the idea of a family, and this is kind of near and dear to my heart, unfortunately, is that the biblical definition of a fool is one who does not know God, doesn't understand others, or even know himself. And I think that describes all of us before we came to the Lord. And in many ways, without being uncharitable, that describes our children, you know. Luther used to call them his little heathen, because apart from the work of the Holy Spirit and the impartation of the knowledge of the Word of God and the effect that parents can have on the development of children, they will grow up to be fools, right? I mean, they won't really understand themselves, they won't really understand others, and they certainly will not come to a saving knowledge of the Lord apart from the work of the Holy Spirit and the influence of parents. So that is what we are headed for. That's what we are attempting to be a part of, the work of the Lord in our children's lives. And in family, we can't hide our foolishness, right? That's why the Lord puts us in families, to develop us as people and to expose our foolishness. Who knows how foolish we are any more than our family? But our families can only know that when we put the technology aside and turn off the media and actually spend time together, you know, face to face. And, as iron sharpens iron, as the scripture says, that's only going to happen when we're actually interacting with one another. And then just finally, as I put on there also, just the New Testament view in 1 Peter, that we're exiles. You know, we as believers today and the people of God throughout all eternity have been exiles in this land. We are, you know, in the world, but not of the world any longer. And so we can appropriate and use the technology that the Lord has blessed mankind with, you know, for good. And we should do that. I encourage that. But we also need to remember that we are not of this world, and so we do not have to be completely, and we should not be completely assimilated into the culture. And it's so easy for me to just kind of almost mindlessly go about my use of my phone and mindlessly go about my use of my laptop and ignore the fact that to some extent it begins to control me, right? And so being mindful of that and realizing that we have been called to far higher things. So the second item there, just the use and misuse of media and technology. There's a lot of good things. As I said, I am not at all trying to talk against the use of technology and media. I'm just encouraging the proper place for it. There's some items on there. There may be, you know, probably, I'm sure I didn't even try to make a complete list of it. There's a lot of things that you all may have found that are very good about the use of media and technology. Certainly one is adding wonder, you know, with our children. It can add wonder to our children's lives, you know, videos or information on the internet that shows them about natural wonders or architecture or history or all those other nerdy things that I like, that you know, that can develop wonder in our children's lives. That's a real gift to be able to stimulate their minds and to encourage them to seek more of the things that the Lord has blessed us with. You know, but on the flip side, it can begin to replace real wonder with virtual wonder, right? You know, it's what's more wonderful to see a picture of, you know, my vacation to Yellowstone and say, boy, that's a beautiful place, or to actually go there and to see it and to experience it, to see a picture of a beautiful bird, you know, in flight. Wow, that's really cool, and that can really stimulate a child's mind and discovery and interest. But to actually go outside and watch, you know, the birds in their natural habitat, you know, that's real wonder, not virtual wonder. So those are, you know, kind of the flip sides. Everything that the Lord has blessed us with, you know, the human heart is able to twist into something that is not at all what he intended, right? And it's true also with media and technology. Knowledge, you know, you can gain a lot of knowledge through the use of media and technology, but you can't really gain wisdom, right? I mean, wisdom, as the Word of God tells us, you know, the beginning of wisdom is the fear of the Lord. But wisdom, even in a practical manner, is gained by interaction with people and learning to make decisions and learning how to develop a wise way of viewing the world. You just can't gain that through media and technology. That is something that has to be gained through life experience and interaction. You know, another one that's quite common, you can gain a lot of friends, right, through media and technology. That's become like a new concept in our world through Facebook and things. But on the flip side, the bad side of that is that it really can become a substitute for real relationships. You know, I've got, you know, 562 friends online, you know, but how many people am I in relationship with? How many people do I interact with and have a real relationship with? Certainly a big one for us, I think. My wife and I tend to try to really use technology for efficiency. You know, it can definitely make us a whole lot more efficient in a lot of ways than we used to be able to be. You know, I think of word processing versus typing. Right, I mean, if you type like I do, then either one's going to be slow, but it's at least the word processing, it automatically corrects my 52 spelling errors in one paragraph. Whereas, so you can be a lot more efficient with that as compared to what we used to have. But on the flip side, I don't know about you, but I struggle sometimes. You can waste time really well with the use of media and technology. How many of us have, you know, kind of been looking at our phone and then all of a sudden you realize, oh my gosh, a half an hour went by, you know, or you're on the internet and you're searching for something and, you know, and all of a sudden you're just off in this virtual land over to the right or to the left and you realize an hour has blown by. You know, so you can really waste a lot of time very easily that way. Not to mention, and I think this is really important with our children, you know, you can use media and technology for good in the sense of encouragement and building one another up and developing positive outlook on things, on issues, or on life in general. Or certainly it can be used to slander, to criticize, or even to miscommunicate. I kind of have decided a long time ago not to communicate too many emotionally laden things with anybody through text or through email, because it can so easily be miscommunicated when you just see the words, but you're not interacting with somebody face to face. And I think, you know, training our children about that and helping them to understand that just the words themselves can mean different things if you have no cues, no context of interacting with people face to face. So are there any other ideas that that you all have, like good uses for technology or media, things that, like I said, I didn't try to be exhaustive here. I just tried to come up with a few that came right off the top of my head that but I'm sure there's lots of other uses that can be used for good, or even things that can be used, unfortunately, for evil through media and technology. Any that jump out at you? Yeah, Eric?
To sync up every one of our schedules, we know what's going on. It's very helpful.
Yeah, that's excellent. Yep, that's a good use. Yeah, Joel?
One thing that we try to think about is whether our kids' use of technology is bringing them together or sending them off in different directions by themselves. We encourage them to do things that they can do together. And
that's excellent.
Encourage anybody taking some device off by themselves somewhere.
Right, because that's real easy to do. I mean, how many times do we, you know, sometimes inadvertently or just not being intentional, not thinking about it, isolate ourselves from our children purposely or not purposely, you know, just unintentionally. That isolation, you're right, because when you plug into a phone or a laptop or something, it's real easy to isolate. But it can be used to bring people together, you know, to develop that let's learn this together, or let's view this together, or let's experience this together. That can be very good. Excellent. Yep, Dan. Yeah, misinformed or better informed. Right, right. Yeah, I mean, I find sometimes I run across something that's fake news, you know, and I'm like, is that real or is that what? I'm not even sure sometimes whether it's true or not. And it's, you know, put out there on purpose, you know, sometimes satirically and sometimes for whatever reason. I'm not really sure. Lisa? Right. Absolutely. That using media for that kind of a thing can stimulate, the child's, their creativity, their wonder of stories, and at the same time can build into them biblical principles. And life skills, absolutely, those things are excellent. Yep.
I have two fold, at least, what comes to mind immediately. One is being able to communicate the gospel to a massive audience in other countries.
Right.
Which has happened with many ministries getting video, audio, literature to them, which is amazing. I agree with Dan about the information, misinformation thing, because if it's one thing we have not personally partaken in of ourselves, or we've seen other people do it, it's this knee-jerk reaction when we see something, not checking our sources, jumping the gun emotionally, and we're not putting honor to Christ there.
Right.
We're not honoring truth. We're not thinking God's thoughts after him. So it can be a big snare for diminishing our thinking.
Absolutely. Yeah, that's excellent. Yeah, I mean, so the third point there, that kind of leads more to the practical application of some of these things. Really, as with everything in our life, trying to harness the things of our lives, the things of this world, the tools that we've been given, like media and technology, and have a Godward direction, you know, for our children. Yes, use it, absolutely. But use it wisely and use it with intentionality so that we're pointing them to the Lord, pointing them to Christ, pointing them to things that will build them up and not tear them down. You know, and some of those things you all have brought out. You know, human creativity is very good in its right place to discover and develop who God created our children to be. You know, that can be a really powerful thing if we just use it well. So under those ideas of Godward directions of the use of technology and media, loving God. You know, now this, we have to start with ourselves. You know, ask yourselves, is using this technology or viewing this media, is it going to make me more wise or is it going to make me more foolish? Farah says, she had the habit of saying it for a while. We couldn't really remember where she got it from. But, you know, in watching, you know, a video or watching a movie or something, you know, sometimes you watch something and you thought you were well-intentioned. You get to the end and you look at each other and you're like, I feel more stupid now than I did before I watch this. And, you know, trying to look ahead and more wisely spend our time because, I mean, how easy. You can just blow 90 minutes watching something that is just absolutely has no redeeming value whatsoever. And I don't mean inappropriate. I just mean just a waste of time. And I don't know about you, but, you know, time is precious. Right. Right. Absolutely. You know, and as I said, you know, back up at the top, there is Christian freedom. No one can or should take that away from us. And that's the God-given responsibility that we have for our families is to determine what is the best use of our time. You know, and thinking about that as good Presbyterians, you know, think about the Shorter Catechism, you know, question number one, you know, what is the chief end of man? You know, it's to glorify God and to enjoy him forever. So questioning, you know, is using this technology in this way or watching this or interacting with that media, is this helping me to achieve that chief end? Is this helping me to glorify the Lord more, or is this just a negative use of my time and effort and brain power? And then another concept under that in the idea of loving God through the use of our technology and media. I was kind of challenged by this book. I think Pastor Francis has it. It's The Tech Wise Family by Andy Crouch. And he just offered some practical advice, some practical pointers that they have implemented in their family. They actually, in embracing the Sabbath and the fact that the Lord has made the Sabbath for man, you know, the Sabbath was made for man, not man for the Sabbath, as Jesus tells us, and it's for our time of rest. They actually practice, you know, 1 hour a day, one day a week, and 1 week a year where they completely unplug from media. And, you know, I thought about that. That's pretty challenging, really. I could do an hour a day. I could even do a day a week. But a week a year, you know, that might be a tough one. But it might be something to think about just as a discipline, as a way of showing our children and demonstrating for our children that, yeah, we're not dependent upon these things because we do get dependent upon them, right? I mean, very easily we can be dependent upon them, but that we are going to use them, you know, as the Lord leads us to use them. And just to encourage you there, I think I included on your handout Colossians 3, you know, to set your mind on things above, not on things of the earth, and not to be consumed by them. It's really easy. I don't think that anyone is exempt from the all-encompassing swallowing up of your energy and time and effort that technology and media can do. Most of us, you know, if you see a screen on, what happens? You just, your eyes go to that screen, right? I mean, you lose focus with whoever you're talking with or whatever's going on, and your eyes are just drawn to that screen. And it's so easy to allow that to happen. Any questions about that? Anybody have any comments about that idea of Sabbath? Yep, Karen. That's an excellent, excellent question. Very applicable not only to this topic, but just life in general. And let me start out with saying, obviously, there are differing views of the Sabbath. There are even differing views of how the Lord still requires us to observe the Sabbath. There are those who say that, no, that's the old law, and that we're no longer under that law. And then there are those of us who would say, well, then why are you picking out one of the Ten Commandments when yet you still think that the other nine are applicable to us? There's nothing in the New Testament that at all indicates that in any way, shape, or form. If anything, Jesus supports and encourages the continued observance of the Sabbath by saying that the Sabbath was created for man. So how does that look? Well, one of the ways is by you know, looking at the confession, and now granted, those were written in the 1600s, so life was very different, and yet the principles are the same, that the Sabbath is for the public and private exercises of God's worship, except for those things that are of necessity or mercy. And so necessity can be, you know, a little bit nebulous, and I think that's what you're hitting on, is that what is needed? Well, it's pretty much, unless we're going to fast every Sabbath, it's needed that somebody's going to do some kind of food preparation. Yep, you could look at that as work. I wouldn't get too wrapped up in the legalism that can very easily come about when we start to look at those things, but I would definitely say that the majority, if not the entirety, of our day should be spent in worship to the Lord, both corporately, both individually, in within our families, within those of our, you know, our small groups, growth groups, hospitality, things like that. But I wouldn't. It's really easy to get wrapped up in the minutia of the details. But in this context, talking about media, just the idea of just taking a break from it because it is so all-encompassing. And because we need to see it for what it is, it's a tool. It's a tool for work. So it's unplugging one aspect of our work life away from us by putting down our phone or turning off our laptop and just, you know, spending time together, interacting, communicating, you know, playing a game with our kids, going on a hike, you know, things like that, that where we can talk about the Lord as he has commanded us. That's an excellent point. I hope that at least somewhat answered it a little bit for you.
Mm-hmm.
So moving on to that B there, loving others in media and using technology. And Farah really helped me in this because she's been very intentional about this with our girls, really breaking it down into three things. Those especially that have young children, thinking ahead, you know, and really planning out ahead. As I had asked at the very beginning, you know, what kind of a life do you want for yourself, for your family, for your children? And thinking ahead before they get old enough to really, although nowadays, I mean, they're what, like 18 months old, and I see them with cell phones or whatever, you know, but thinking ahead, what are going to be the parameters? How am I going to guide them? What vision do I have for my children? How are we going to develop their character qualities and their beliefs about the Lord, about themselves, and about education? So, you know, really talking about those things, you know, mom and dad, talking about what are we going to do? What are we not going to do? When are we going to allow them to have it? And when are we not going to allow them to have it? And being very intentional. As I said before, there is, you know, I am not at all trying to advocate that there's one way to do anything here in this topic. There's certainly Christian liberty, and every family looks different. It's going to run differently and look different. But just being intentional about it and thinking about those things, it makes it easier to say no to things that distract from the goals that we have for our children if we know where we're headed. So really thinking about that ahead of time and making parameters that you can stick to. You know, and it made me think about, like, our homes. Where do you spend most of your time at home? Yeah, kitchen, yeah, if you're my family. Yeah, right. You know, most people, it's either the kitchen or the family room. You know, if you have, like, a family room or whatever you want to call it, living room, family room. And thinking about, okay, if this is where we spend most of our time, what does it look like? What's kind of the focal point? What is telling my kids subconsciously or with nonverbal communication of what's most important in our family? You know, in days gone by, the focal point of every family room or living room or whatever, one room if you lived in one room, you know, was the fireplace, right? It was the place of warmth. It was the place where they cooked. It was the place, that was kind of the focal point. That was where everybody gathered around so you didn't freeze to death and all those kinds of things. But what nowadays, you know, thinking about what is the focal point of where we spend most of our time and just planning that accordingly, you know. We had made the decision a long time ago. We just did not want, and this is just us, we did not want the focal point of our family room to be the television, right? So we have no TV. In the family room at all. There's one downstairs in the basement, and you know, it can be used occasionally, but it's just not going to be the focal point. It's going to be that all the chairs or all the seating arrangements all focus in on each other. So when we sit down, we're all looking at each other. We're communicating. We're spending time together, and just being intentional about that. I would just encourage you to think about that. Other ways through initial decisions for, as I said, really for parents of young children and trying to think ahead, that, you know, we don't parent to be friends with them today. We parent so that hopefully 20 years from now or so we'll be friends with them, right? But sometimes you have to be courageous and make decisions that are not going to be popular. They're not going to be what all their friends make. And yeah, Jim.
I'll preface this comment with an admission that this topic exhausts and frustrates me, especially when talked about in church settings. And I'm not saying anything about this talk. Mm-hmm. It's usually loaded full of cliche. And a lot of times it's aspirational on the part of the parents who are trying to figure it out.
Mm-hmm.
If you never parented young teens, older teens, young adults,
this area especially, I mean, this is a losing battle, if it's a battle. You're not going to win it. So you have to be relying on the Lord to do his work. So you need to be praying for your kids. But what triggered me to make this comment is, you're right, we're not to be our children's friends in a lot of areas. Mm-hmm. But this is not, there's no parenting topic that's going to work if you're not treating your child like a friend in some ways. And what I mean is being very honest about your own struggles with this.
Absolutely.
Your
absolutely.
Own downfalls.
Yep.
Not just in your ancient history, but in your recent history.
Mm-hmm.
You need to befriend your child in this area. You need to befriend your child in the way that a real friend comes alongside. This is not enough. An authoritarian battle is never going to win this, period. You need to be coming alongside them, confessing your own downfalls, confessing your own, the own consequences you've had in your own life from your downfalls, and telling them, I'm not reading your email, I'm not watching your network activity, I'm not doing all this because I want to catch you and because I'm trying to beat you down. Because I want to come alongside you and help you understand and help you be honest with yourself and with others about this. So it is a losing battle if it's a battle, right? If it's an authoritarian battle. But if you're praying for your children and praying for, you know, the Lord to do his work in them and to do his work in you and be really upfront with them about your own battles,
I agree. That's one of the things on there is that we have to be able to admit, you know, to our kids, like you said, not just our past, but even, oh man, I'm just spending too much time, you know, today, or dad has just spent way too much time today, you know, researching things on the internet or whatever. I need to just turn it off and spend time, you know, with you. Or when my, you know, girls come to me and say, you know, Dad, can I show you this? And I'm like, oh, you know, I'm right in the middle of something, you know. And I'm sorry, you know, Dad was really focused on the wrong thing at the wrong time. Absolutely, I would agree with you. And having the wisdom to know when, you know, that's all about parenting, right? Knowing the wisdom of when you treat our children differently depending upon their stage of life and their stage of responsibility and their stage of accountability. It absolutely changes as the years go by. There's no question about it.
Sometimes they can go the wrong way too. Let the child have more freedom than what they're supposed to have, because that can go wrong too.
Sure, and that's what the last point there, the signs that we need to love our children in, and this, you know, it varies at different stages, as Jim pointed out. That we need to love them by, you know, limiting their technology, maybe even taking it away. You know, if they're complaining to me bitterly that they are not allowed to have their technology, then that, you know, I use that as an example to point to them, maybe this means a little bit too much to you. If you can't show respect and submission, you know, at this point in your life to your mom or dad, when we just suggest taking it away for, you know, a brief period of time, then that shows that it means a little bit too much for you. And we have to be honest about that with ourselves as well and be, you know, upfront with our kids about that.
I think it was a lot easier back when we were younger, especially me and a lot of the older people than what's in here.
It was easier in a sense.
Easier because yeah. You didn't have Mm-hmm. We're supposed to have a family. I never had that. Mm-hmm. You know, we all went our separate ways and was happy with it.
Right.
And all, but it's just too much out there, too much that us as well as children can more or less see and experience. And, you know, other people influence us a lot, too.
Right. Fewer distractions,
yeah,
you know, when we were...
back, fewer distractions. And it was all about family and it was all about getting out and seeing seeing stuff outside, because all we spend is all the time outside.
Mm-hmm.
Either riding bikes or riding or doing something.
Right.
It's too much.
That's true. But as Jim said, I mean, that is a good point. I mean, life has changed, and we have to realize that. So we need to be intentional about how we're going to guide kids with that. So I'm going to let you go ahead, Jim.
Well, I think we do need to be careful about looking back at the rose-colored glasses.
Yeah, absolutely.
But obviously there is a lot more to think about in certain ways. But again, doing any of that outside the context of being open with your own struggles, because I'm going to tell you right now, I struggle with media.
Mm-hmm.
I mean,
we all do.
I work on the internet all day long anyway. Mm-hmm. That's my job.
Yeah.
Again, going back to you can't be your kid's friend, I come from the other perspective of I lived that too hard, and I pushed my kids away and made it where I wasn't honest with my own struggles. I set up false expectations around them and then came down on them when they failed, and that backfires. So you do have to be relational and friendly within this so-called battle. And some of the things you can do is engage in some of that media with your kids. So that you have a common ground of communication with them. You see a game they love to play, play it some too and talk about it. Again, within proper parameters. But
right.
Don't just make them feel like every time I pick up the phone I'm sinning, right?
Sure, absolutely. Yeah, because that's not the case. Right.
Yeah, because that's where I feel like most of us run into the real battle and the real frustration and the real misery of this is that we vilify the technology. And I think this talk has been great about not doing that. You've given a lot of balance, the good and the bad. And we have to keep that in mind. John Piper's article, Why I Tweet, is a really good thing to go Google on your next media session.
did you have your hand up, Marcia?
I did.
Yeah.
I was just going to say, one thing we have to realize is why are our children using technology? What is maybe lacking in their lives? What are they
Mm-hmm.
Don't just think it's because, don't just have a preconceived notion of why that you're taking away. So it's you're throwing a fit. So that's, hey, I'm justified in taking it away. It's, why is it that being proud
right.
going out there? Because, you know, we're using technology for numbing things because there's other problems going on.
Yeah, absolutely. Refocusing them and helping them to see themselves and what's going on in their own heart. And I just wanted to end with two things real quickly here, because there's a lot more on there. And I provided this basically to just let you take it away and look at it on your own time and to stimulate some ideas and thoughts. But, you know, there's no shame for the past. If, you know, if we've already allowed what we wish we hadn't, you know, we can move forward and apologize to our kids as appropriate, depending upon their age and the situation. But I just want to leave you really with this thought. And this is, I don't know, I think this sums up really what the Lord would have us think in terms of the use of technology and media. That Philippians 4:8, that finally, brothers, whatever is true, whatever is honorable, whatever is just, whatever is pure, whatever is lovely, whatever is commendable, if there is any excellence, if there is anything worthy of praise, that we should think about these things. So, all right. Thank you very much.